Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review for April 18th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with local news, an article titled "Longtime Pilot Landing Career with FAA Award" from Decatur. If you took off and flew continuously for the total number of hours veteran Decatur pilot Barton Cole has under his wing, you would not land again for 15 months. Stretching the boundaries of achievement has come naturally to Cole, who has flown everything from military ground attack fighters to private passenger jets in his 11,000 hours of flight time. Those hours were racked up over a career that spans an extraordinary 50 years and was recognized by the Federal Aviation Administration in January. The FAA presented Cole with its prestigious Wright Brothers Master Pilot Award to acknowledge his half-century of safe, exemplary flying. Slim and cool, calm and collected, with the coveted gold wings he won in the Navy now pinned to his private pilot's uniform, Cole is self-effacing and slipstreams in jokes you have to think about to catch. Asked what he thought of his impressive recent honor, he smiled and said, "I guess this is the way the FAA has of recognizing pilots who, after 50 years, still have the same number of takeoffs and landings." The father of two and grandfather of five had grown up in Macon dreaming of flight. He later discovered he had an aptitude for it, and after graduating from the University of Illinois, headed out to sea to learn to fly. "I went into the Navy and went to flight school in 1965," he says, "and I did my first solo flight on October 27th, 1965, 50 years ago." After 13 years of active duty in Naval Reserve Service, he had flown on into civilian life looking for a pilot's berth, but found the skies less than friendly. "I had a letter of hire from United Airlines in 1970, but then they had started laying pilots off," Cole says. So he took a chance and flew in a totally different direction by buying a beer distribution company in 1972. Happily, he found his assured pilot's eye proved pretty adept at navigating the flight path of running a successful business. The love of flying continued to orbit his heart, however, and he bought himself a twin-engine prop aircraft, which he flew in his spare time to keep me in the game. By 1997, he was ready to shift careers again, selling the business so he could seek profit from the skies. He went on to perform various pilot jobs and flew for Archer Daniels Midland Company for 2.5 years before being hired as a pilot for NetJets in 2004. Owned by Berkshire Hathaway, NetJets runs a fleet of some 400 private jets in which the passengers actually own a share of the planes in which they fly. It's a life reserved for top-flight business executives, professional golfers, and entertainment stars, and means you have a private jet available on short notice to take you where you want to go. Cole has flown all over North America, Mexico, and the Caribbean, and taken passengers as far as London. He said the luxuriously appointed jets are a grand way to roar across the heavens. "Oh, they're quite comfortable," says Cole, describing the sumptuous interiors with his trademark understatement. "But I've never ridden in the back. I'm always up front." Sandy Cole, his wife of 37 years, doesn't get many passenger rides in executive jets either, but she has been a passenger in lesser planes with her husband at the controls. She said she can understand why celebrities and everyone else would enjoy having her unflappable hubby zip them along at 550 miles per hour. "You can trust him. He's such a good pilot," she says. "I guess I figure if he can land on aircraft carriers in the Navy," he has 252 carrier landings to his credit, "he can land anywhere." Now 72, Barton Cole says he is taxiing toward retirement from NetJets this year. But as long as he's able, he still plans to fly and has already spoken to some folks who will occasionally have need of a seasoned pilot's services. He says the thrill of flight never grows old, and the natural high of bursting through a dense layer of dark cloud to embrace the perpetual sunny skies far above always makes his soul take wing. They say that flying is the second best feeling you will ever have, he says with a bright smile. The best feeling, of course, is landing. This article is accompanied by several pictures. The first shows Mr. Barton standing at the control tower of Decatur Airport. The next shows him at the control panel inside an airplane, Cole, ready for takeoff. And then finally, a detailed look at the Federal Aviation Administration award to Barton Cole, showing the certificate. The certificate has a photograph, or not a photograph, but a drawing of the Wright brothers, showing the Wright Brothers Master Pilot Award. Then an article from Decatur, written by Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer. Council to consider home kitchen ordinance. Cityways home bake ordinance. From Decatur. People who want to sell baked goods prepared in their homes could do so under a new ordinance the Decatur City Council will consider today. The addition to city code would implement changes allowed under the so-called cupcake law that took effect January 1st. State lawmakers created the home kitchen exemption to the Food Handling Regulation Enforcement Act to allow small-scale bakers to sell their goods. But local governments have to adopt an ordinance to allow the home kitchens. A group of bakers appeared before the council at its last meeting to ask for the ordinance, which several council members appeared to support. In order to qualify, the bakers must have monthly gross sales of less than $1,000, sell directly to the consumer, and provide notice that the food was prepared in a home kitchen. They must attach a label with allergen information and store the food in the residence where it is prepared or packaged. The business also must operate under the city's zoning rules, meaning that goods could not be sold from the home and only people living at the residence could work there. The thing we have to try and do as a city is try and strike a balance between encouraging home kitchens, which we feel like this helps with, but also protecting and supporting the neighborhoods where they exist, from a zoning perspective, and making sure that if this is allowed, we find a balance between those two things, Assistant Manager Billy Tyus said Friday. Not everyone thinks the ordinance is a good idea. Diana Heyer, Macon County Health Department Administrator, said Friday that she worries the ordinance would affect the health department's ability to preserve food safety for the public. Heyer plans to address the council before it votes today. This ordinance really has no protection for the public health at all, she said. It requires no food safety training, no inspections. The health department can only respond if there were an outbreak or a complaint. There's no assurance that the individual doing the baking is baking it appropriately or safely. Further, the state's budget situation has stretched the department's resources so much that it would be difficult to respond in the event of a food-related illness outbreak. The intention is not to hurt anyone's ability to earn an income, Heyer said, adding that the department has offered to work with home bakers to help them become licensed, which would require certain training and kitchen equipment. Our whole mission in the health department is to protect the health of the public through our food inspections and our education that we do, she said. So my question would be then, are we also not going to do inspections of restaurants or the bakers who are licensed? In other business, the council will consider allowing public art on city-owned property, such as sidewalks and electrical boxes. The art must represent the city's message, Tyus said, but the city could work with organizations such as the Decatur Arts Council to create the art. Concentrations of public art could attract more people to certain areas, such as downtown, he said. It allows for that excitement factor, that cool factor, that distinguishing factor that helps to make these spaces more desirable, he said. The sidebar says, if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. today in the Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Then, from the local pages, an article by Justin Kahn, Herald and Review staff writer. Finding Lincoln Again, Committee Replaces Worn Wayside Exhibits. The best way to describe the Macon County and Decatur Looking for Lincoln Steering Committee was dormant, until those with an interest in local history began to notice many of the 15 wayside exhibits were fading and peeling badly. The Looking for Lincoln Heritage Coalition was formed in 1998, and in 2007 began its wayside exhibit program, the Looking for Lincoln Story Trail. Between 2008 and 2011, 215 wayside exhibits in 52 Illinois communities were installed, including 15 in Decatur. The coalition encouraged those communities with multiple wayside exhibits to form their own committees, and Macon County and Decatur did so. Decatur's signs went up in 2009, but the group had ceased meeting until many of the exhibits began showing much more wear than expected in just 4 years. We needed to get something back together, said Nathan Pierce, Macon County History Museum director. The one at my location was peeling bad. Any of them that were out in the sun were in really bad shape. With help from the state, Looking for Lincoln Committee, Decatur Area Convention and Visitors Bureau Executive Director Terry Hamill, Pierce and seven others interested in local history reformed the committee. Since then, 13 of the 15 exhibits have been replaced, and the other two likely will be replaced soon. The signs weren't supposed to wear so quickly. Pierce said the company that made the signs had subcontracted some of the work and that a bad batch of chemicals had been used in constructing several of the exhibits, including all of Decatur's. The exhibits had a 10-year warranty, so the company replaced them for free. It happened all over the state. It wasn't just Decatur, Pierce said. Christy Foltz, Inc. installed the 10 downtown signs, with Pierce and a friend putting up the rest. Pierce said the committee plans to touch up the paint on the exhibits this spring. Our focus is to keep the exhibits taken care of and looking nice, said Hamill, who is the committee chairwoman. Our main goal is to keep Lincoln alive in Illinois. Part of that is keeping the exhibits from becoming an eyesore. Now there's something to be proud of again, and that encourages people to tour the trail. Hamill also belongs to the state committee, which meets quarterly, and is helping communities without their own committee to replace and spruce up their signs. She said the Macon County and Decatur committee would continue to meet and was hoping to have a program for National Tourism Week in May. And the sidebar shows fix-ups. Between 2013 and 2016, the Macon County and Decatur Looking for Lincoln Committee has replaced 13 of the city's 15 Lincoln Story Trail wayside exhibits. And they were, in 2013, Lincoln's first political speech and A Favorite Lies Here. In 2014, Lincoln on the Changing Circuit. In 2015, signs including Music Please, Maestro, Lincoln's Legacy, Choosing a President, Finding the Biggest Man, Lincoln on the Circuit, Coming to Illinois, Let Us All Be United, and Settling in Illinois. And in 2016, the sign titled Winter of the Deep Snow. And Valerie Wells writes from Decatur, second graders get glimpse of funnest job. Argenta Oriana Grade School tours cat for engineering lesson. The definition of engineering, broken down for second graders, is we make stuff, said Rich Johnston of Caterpillar, Inc. Argenta Oriana grade school students visited CAT on Friday to learn about engineering as part of their science, technology, engineering, and math focus, STEM. One of the places they visited was the Concept Center, a workshop where engineers try out ideas. Teacher Sherry Hayes said the students have been learning about simple machines and the visit to CAT would help them see the same concepts apply to more complex machines too. The origami lab, joked Tom Mayan, is where engineers make paper cutouts to test an idea, such as the Cyclops dog head bracket he had cut out of a sticky note. If that works, and it did, they try to make one of wood to see if the idea still holds up. Eventually, like the bracket, a metal version is made. If you come up with a cool name, you win, Mayan said. Johnston showed the students photos of things such as a cell phone, a bridge, a frog, and a tree, and asked them which ones engineers designed. While the answer is obvious to adults, he had to nudge the kids a little bit. Engineers are not capable of designing and building frogs and trees, he said. He showed them a rushing river with boulders in and around it and asked them how they would cross that river. Several kids suggested hopping from rock to rock, but Abby Ray had the engineering answer. I'd build a bridge, she said. Building a bridge isn't as simple as it sounds, though. Johnston also showed them a 1940 film of the Galloping Gertie, a bridge over Tacoma Narrows in Washington State, which opened in May 1940 and collapsed in a windstorm in November 1940 because engineers had not allowed for the high winds of the area in their design. The film shows the bridge swaying wildly, breaking apart, and finally collapsing into the water. That is horrible, said student Luke Bruns, as other students gasped. No one was hurt in the collapse, Johnston said, because it was obvious for some time that the bridge was unstable, so people had time to get away to safety. The bridge is an example of an engineering failure because the design had not been properly tested. This is what we do for a living, he said. It's the funnest job in the world. Engineer Lane Hook agreed. The point of inviting the kids in, he said, was to show them that everything they learn in school is important, from science and math to reading and writing, and engineers use all those skills every day. Every day when I come to work, I'm smiling because I love my job, he said. From Harristown, Tony Reed writes, motorcycle crash prompts safety call. An accident that left a motorcyclist critically injured has prompted police to urge riders to use extra care now that a new riding season is here. The 69-year-old rider suffered severe injuries Saturday when he lost control of his machine on a curve in the 7400 block of Mount Auburn Road near the intersection of Timber Trail. His Harley-Davidson Fat Boy model left the road and ejected the driver as it flipped. The rider was airlifted by helicopter to the intensive care unit of HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield, where he remained in critical condition Sunday, according to police. The Macon County Sheriff's Office said motorcyclists must use extra caution as they get back on machines they may not have ridden during the winter. Sergeant Scott Flannery said the rider in the Harristown crash has been riding motorcycles for 45 years, but Saturday was the first time he had taken his bike out this year. We ask that motorcyclists remember that their handling skills may not be as keen due to the long, non-motorcycle riding season, he added. Flannery said all drivers should expect to find more motorcyclists using the highways and look out for them. If everyone on the road is aware of each other and cognizant of their abilities, we can hope for a safe spring and summer, Flannery said. And Tony Reed brings an article from Decatur. Decatur Youth Symphony Players Blend Well in Year's Final Concert. Madeline Gennett is off to college soon to study chemistry, even though she already knows a lot about the subject. She demonstrated it Sunday afternoon in the spirited final concert of the season with the Decatur Youth Symphony Orchestra at Millikan University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center. Playing first chair for clarinet, the 18-year-old senior from Moequa reveled in the performer-audience chemistry that sprang from music played well with feeling. "Performance gives you, like, such a rush, and you get butterflies and your heart races," said Gennett, who will study biology, chemistry, and nuclear medicine technology at the University of Findlay in Ohio. "It's just a great feeling to know people are hearing what you've been working on for so long. They hear all that hard work." Sunday's concert was a lively affair all around as an audience of about 200 listened to a variety of traditional folk dances from Hungary, Scotland, Spain, and Italy. An extra splash of color and movement was added by guest artists from the Dance Center in Decatur. The 50-strong orchestra featured two solo performances from violinist Josanie White and oboist Michaela Waddleworth. White, a homeschooled student who played in the MacArthur High School Orchestra, played the Haydn Violin Concerto in G major, while Waddleworth, a senior at Warrensburg-Latham High School, played a piece called The Winter's Past by contemporary classical composer Wayne Barlow. Waddleworth said she had started playing with the youth orchestra in the eighth grade, beginning as third chair. "Being a part of an orchestra and getting to play with more experienced players has really helped me," she said. "You can practice all you want on your own, but it's a rush when everyone comes together to play as a group." She grew up in a house filled with music, and her father, Eric, is band director at her high school. No pressure," she added with a laugh. "She will major in music performance at Millikan." Neil Smith, music director with Millikan's preparatory department, is the orchestra director and says it's open to players from 6th grade through 12th. Auditions will be held in September. Call 217-425-4698 for details. And from Charleston, cancellation of EIU's celebration leaves gap. Under normal circumstances, celebration, a festival of the arts, would be as much of a staple of the spring season as flowers blooming and thunderstorms brewing. However, the annual community event originally slated for this upcoming weekend was canceled, a victim of the lack of appropriations from the state. Instead, Hayes Avenue will lay empty, which vendors and organizers consider a loss to the community as well as to themselves. Dan Cruz, who has organized the 39-year-old festival for 27 years, said celebration gave the community a way to view different types of art. Cruz described the festival as a gathering point for the community. Cruz said he considered it important for people to get the chance not only to see art from local vendors and hear a variety of music, but also potentially learn from these artists through informal workshops. Randy Turner, a glass blower from Paris and art vendor at Celebration for 7 years, said it was as much of a teaching experience for younger artists as a chance for people to look at and buy art. "We would always have both local high school and EIU art and photography students come and look at our art and talk with us about what it takes to make art a part of your lives," Turner said. Jeff Boschart, celebration organizer and retired sculpture professor, said he knew many who would drive far to see the new pieces artists made at the festival. Cruz said the cancellation has been a strange and sad experience. It left a really big emptiness. Boschart described it as a kick in the gut. Cruz and Boschart pointed out that the cancellation also deprives these artists and musicians of an expected festival to sell their art or perform. For the traditional food vendors, too, it was a disappointment. P.J. Rogers of Rogers French Fries, food vendor at Celebration, said even though he saw the cancellation coming, it was still disheartening. Beyond financial reasons, for Robin Willie, pottery vendor at Celebration since 1983 and an Eastern graduate, Celebration was a homecoming. "It was a tradition for me, like going back home," Willie said. "The people who were most disappointed about the cancellations were my kids. They've helped me every year since they could pick up a box of pots." While Celebration is out of the picture this year, Dan Cruz said FundFest, a festival geared toward generating funds to be given to those laid off at Eastern, could provide some of what Celebration had to offer. The fundraiser event by Support EIU employees is slated to take place from 11 a.m. until 11 p.m. Saturday, April 30th, at the Coles County Fairgrounds. The festival will feature live music, food vendors, silent auctions, various booths, raffles, an art expo, and children's activities such as carnival games. And Valerie Wells writes, "Students take note of instrument petting zoo," from Decatur. Keenan Hentz is a natural-born sax player. At the instrument petting zoo at Muffley School on Friday, Keenan picked up a saxophone, which she said she'd never done before, and played. She didn't just make noise. "I want this one," she said, and she was very sure of her decision. That's the whole reason for the instrument petting zoo held by the Symphony Orchestra Guild of Decatur, said Marilyn Mertz, a member of the guild. Students in third and fourth grade can try out instruments in every category, woodwinds, brass, strings, and percussion. So when they have an opportunity in the fall to sign up for orchestra or band, they'll already have a good idea of which instrument appeals to them. "We can only do this at one school a year," Mertz said. "I wish we could do it at all of them. About 87% of students will say they want to study an instrument. Not all of them will, of course, and 87% of our students are eligible for free lunch and textbooks. They depend on the instrument lending library to be able to participate." The Guild maintains that lending library of instruments, most donated and some purchased for the library, to provide low-income students with a chance to learn to play. Renting or buying an instrument is out of the reach of many families, but the Guild wants to make sure those kids have an opportunity. The instrument petting zoo is for any child interested in learning to play an instrument, not only low-income students, because the Guild wants them to make an informed choice. If they've never seen a flute or guitar or violin up close and handled it, they won't know if that instrument speaks to them. The tables full of instruments were manned by Millikan University music students and Guild volunteers, and Millikan freshman music education major Brittany Crone was impressed with Keenan. "Can you believe that?" she said. "Usually I talk to them about embouchure, how a music holds her lips to play a wind instrument, and show them how to do a fingering, and they just blow on it." Volunteer Kathy Crouch was manning the strings table, which several students were interested in, until they heard classmates across the room trying out brass instruments. "They all looked over there," she said with a chuckle. "Strings are kind of quiet. Those make a lot more noise." And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Decatur Herald and Review for April 18th, 2016. Please stay tuned.